This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, October 8th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Bears are in London this week as part of the NFL's effort to expand its influence globally. We'll take a closer look at our next segment, but right now, relief efforts in the U.S. Southeast continue in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, with more resources needed for Hurricane Milton. The situation is bringing out scammers looking to take advantage of people who are trying to help. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Laura Andes, Chief Program and Operations Officer at CharityNavigator.org in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. Laura, thank you for joining us today. And already on social media, Laura, you are seeing solicitations for GoFundMe accounts and Venmo accounts and other electronic funds transfer measures that are up and running that are meant to help the victims in North Carolina and elsewhere of Hurricane Helene. But you got to be really careful if you are giving to somebody's non-vetted GoFundMe.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us here on to talk about this. You know, we really recommend that donors give to an established charity, particularly a 501c3 that you know is working in that region. A lot of people do want to do the right thing and give to GoFundMes. If you're going to do that, it's really important that you donate to an online charity, which is someone you know or a friend of a friend, one degree of separation, to make sure that that fundraiser is legit.
Of the legitimate charities that are involved in storm relief, whether it's in the Southeast or anywhere in the United States, which one is the best at making sure that the majority of dollars you donate actually goes towards helping storm victims?
There are so many fantastic charities working, particularly in Western North Carolina and where Helene hit. You know, obviously the American Red Cross, the Samaritan's Purse, the United Way are doing excellent work. We actually have a list of about 30 charities on our website that you can look up that we have vetted to make sure that they're working in the area and providing quality services.
We're talking about making sure that if you give to storm victims, either Helene or from Hilton, which is bearing down, which is bearing down on Florida, that your money actually goes to people who need help. We're talking about vetting charities with Laura Andes, Chief Program and Operations Officer at CharityNavigator.org in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. Now, one thing that I have seen and others have seen on social media in recent days are efforts to delegitimize legitimate effort to help storm victims, whether it's FEMA or some other organization that is helping people who need help, who've lost basically everything. How does that make things more difficult for your organization that there's just so much, we call it misinformation, others might call it lies, circulating around social media meant to reduce your trust in institutions?
It's a really great point. That is why we at Charity Navigator try so hard to make sure that we really vet charities for the donor so that when they give to a charity through our site or directly, they really know that it's a legitimate charity, it's doing good work in the region, and it's, you know, maximizing your donor dollars.
Laura Andes, Chief Program and Operations Officer at CharityNavigator.org in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll talk about the NFL's mission to conquer the world and how the Bears are part of that mission this upcoming Sunday.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Bears have landed in England ahead of the team's game against Jacksonville on Sunday. It's part of the NFL's annual London series, just one component of the league's global marketing mission. We head overseas to Paris to check in with Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And the Bears, you know, they're no stranger to London. They played a game in London as part of the regular season schedule in 2019. And even as far back as the 80s, they were playing exhibition games in London. So the Bears are no stranger to merry old England.
The Bears have been one of the forerunners of the NFL's expansion overseas. They played in a number of different countries. They played in a number of different continents. Most of those games were preseason games, exhibition games. These games now count, and that has made a huge difference in the way the games have been accepted by fans in England, in Germany, and in Brazil. We played down in Brazil. I was down for the game in early September. The Packers lost, Bears fans like that, to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Now, you bring up a very important point, is that is overseas games or out-of-the-country games are very much a part of any team's schedule nowadays, whether it's London, whether it's Brazil, whether it's Mexico City. How does this play into the overall NFL strategy of becoming a global brand?
Integral part of it. The NFL doesn't just play a game overseas and walks away. The NFL sets up offices, does marketing throughout the year. It creates fan events. It creates viewing parties. The idea is to create a loyal fan base, people who grow up watching and liking football and then become it and then keep being fans as they become adults. A few months ago, I was here in London. I took a picture just as I just haphazard saw something after school. There was a youth, maybe 10 years old, with his school blazer on, tie and disheveled shirt, and he had a football, an American football in his hand. This was at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I sent that picture to Commissioner Goodell. He wrote back immediately, loved it. That's how the strategy takes hold. That's how you know that the strategy takes hold. When the kids start playing it rather than soccer or any other kind of sport, and they're carrying around an American-style football after school, that's how you know it's taking hold, and that's what the league is really focused on. No quick hits. That's the way it used to be. That doesn't work. You have to have longevity. Right now, we play 5 or 6 games overseas. That number was already approved to be 8 a year. And before long, I think we're going to get to 16 games a year overseas.
This almost seems like the reverse strategy of trying to get soccer to take root in the United States, which has happened in a very slow and steady process. I mean, now you have international stars choosing to play in the United States. But where is the NFL in Europe and in other countries, their brand awareness? How does that compare to, let's say, the English Premier League in the United States?
So EPL has gotten popular here in the United States. NBC took its rights many years ago, very low ratings, but in the last 4 or 5 years, those things have really increased. The NFL is actually using flag football. That's the sport where women, girls and women play. There are boys that play it also, but it's not contact. And it's going to be in the Olympics in 2028. In L.A. for the first time. They're using flag football as one of the big international drivers so kids get used to playing the game, holding the football, throwing it, running around the field. So that is a big part of their strategy. The Bears, since we've talked about the Bears and other teams in the NFL, have taken a very strong position in helping advance flag football in their cities and their states. Illinois recently passed their sports association now has flag football as an official sport in high schools with championships. That's going on all over the world. When I was in Brazil with the NFL, we had flag football games and exhibitions there, and in Germany the year before. That is part of the NFL strategy to really globalize American-style football, very similar to how the EPL and other leagues, La Liga, Bundesliga, play games here in the United States. But those are friendlies. Those games don't count. So they're more for the rabid fan of those teams to show up. Until those games actually count, there will be limitations in interest. The NFL learned that the hard way. And so that's why all of these games you see internationally all are regular season games now.
We're going to continue our conversation with Mark Gannis in just a couple of minutes, president co-founder of Sports Corp Limited, because we'll switch gears also, Mark, from football to baseball and an example of Moneyball taking place in the American League Division Series. So stick around, Mark, and you stick around as well.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Detroit Tigers are tied one game apiece with the Cleveland Guardians in their American League Division Series, and the payroll of the 26 men on the Tigers roster in the playoffs combined $18.4 million. The top payroll in Major League Baseball this season is the New York Mets at $317 million. We have a case of Moneyball going on in the Motor City. Let's bring back in Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us once again. And what's amazing about what the Tigers have been able to accomplish is the fact that they were sellers at the trade deadline. They were backing up the truck, which is usually the universal sign that they've given up on their season. But the team management felt that they had a crop of prospects that were ready to turn the corner, and they did.
They weren't just sellers. They were liquidators. They got rid of virtually everyone on their team in just a couple of weeks. They weren't the team stunk. So their feeling was that we're not going to stink any worse if we get our younger players started. Now, they do have arguably the best pitcher, starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. That does help. A guy named Tarik Skubal. But he's really young. Everybody on this team is really young. Now, there are benefits to being really bad for a long time, like the Tigers have been for the last decade. You get to draft higher. They have to draft smarter as well. And they seem to have done that. And then wholesale change. They basically had no sacred cows. Everyone was gone. They changed the entire roster, the entire starting lineup. They even changed how they go about starting pitching. They went from having a rotation of four or five pitchers to having the one starter, and the rest of the guys were doing two or three innings at a time. Changed the entire start, and since on August 11th, they had a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs, and they made the playoffs. They've had the best record in baseball since then. They have a lot of young talent. It'll be really interesting to see how they go forward. And you mentioned the New York Mets. The New York Mets have had a terrible record the first half of the season, and the best record in baseball since the All-Star break. So, and they're in the playoffs and are 1-1 in their series also. So you could be $18 million, $318 million, and you get into the playoffs.
I want
to what a sport.
I want to tie this into the historic woes the White Sox have had this year, because there have been numerous stories that came out since they broke that 1962 Mets record for futility that said that the Sox organization shied away from advanced analytics and really did not adapt with the times as far as data collection is concerned. And it seems like in Major League Baseball, if you want to have a success story like the Tigers or any other team, the coin of the realm is having a really advanced data analytics department, and that's probably the biggest investment you can make outside of signing free agent players.
Unquestionably. If you look at what happened in the North Side when the Ricketts took over that team, they changed the entire baseball side of the equation from scouting, analytics, and breaking down video for the players. They spent a fortune on analytics and on that, on the strategy, the intelligence gathering part of baseball. The Mets have done the same thing. The Tigers have done the same thing. The White Sox need to get with that. Some of it is, they kept on the general manager, frankly, for far, far too long. It's loyalty is one thing, but at some point you just have to realize it's not working. So in sports, you have a win-loss record. You move on if it's not working with that person. Also, the managers. You got to hire the right managers on the field. The White Sox haven't been very successful in that regard. You look at the new guy with the Mets, Mendoza. You look at A.J. Hinch and what he's doing. These are managers who are with the times, who work together with the general managers, going over the analytics, doing the money balls to know not just what players you're going to have on your 28-man roster, but who is going to be on the field or at the batter's box for every pitcher that on the opposing side. So the Tigers have used it to the extreme this year since August 11th, and they've had wild success with righty-lefty combinations. It has worked really well, and the White Sox need to get their act together on this, because baseball has advanced and they haven't very much.
Mark Gannis, president, co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A late-night shooting at a Chicago restaurant leaves two people dead. Hurricane Milton works its way across the Gulf with its sights set on Florida. Travel Tuesday dealing with the impact of severe weather on a trip, including through travel insurance. There are some popular myths about credit cards that could be costing you money. WBBM Business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 11 points. NASDAQ up 179, S&P 500 up 36. It's 69 degrees right now in Chicago under sunny skies, going up to 74 at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, Hurricane Milton has eased a bit, but it remains a dangerous Category 4 storm. Nearly the entire west coast of Florida is under a hurricane warning. Governor Ron DeSantis adds,
"We have 51 counties currently under a state of emergency. As of the 5 a.m. advisory, Hurricane Milton is still a major hurricane.
It's expected to make landfall in the Tampa Bay region tomorrow night. Two men are dead after a shooting at a restaurant on the southwest side last night. It happened around 10:30 at the J.J. Fish and Chicken on 78th and Western. Police say the 55 and 56-year-old victims got into an argument with a male employee who allegedly took out a handgun and began firing at them. One man was hit in the face, the other in the head. Both were pronounced dead at the scene. No word yet on arrests or charges. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Matt Shapiro, president, NWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And the markets have rebounded slightly, and oil prices have eased somewhat. Are the two correlated?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think we're actually somewhat in a directionless market, and it's honestly easy to see correlations all over the place. So, yeah, you know, normally the conflict in the Middle East, we've had, you know, oil touch 75, even higher, Chevron oil stocks coming back, causing some turbulence, but not really. I think, you know, the market's really at all-time highs here. Most stocks are pretty high. P/E ratios kind of expensive. Fed rate path unclear. And, of course, we're coming into the election. So I think we're going to see a lot of back-and-forth trading over the next couple of weeks, depending on the data.
I want to take a look at the bond market for just a second, because that kind of explains why we are where we are, and that is the yield on the 10-year Treasury popped back above 4% in recent days. After reaching maybe the 3-2 range after that one anxiety-inducing jobs report a couple of weeks ago, is that going to be the state of affairs going forward, that the 10-year yield will pop back up again and maybe reduce some of the benefit to borrowers from that interest rate cut?
You know, that's kind of one of the paradoxes, Rob, which is that, you know, it was nice. Oh, my God, the 10-year was 375, even lower. That's so great. But then those weak jobs reports were really sank the market. So it's almost like kind of uncomfortable that rates are 4. It's kind of a bummer if you didn't lock in a refi, you know, if you were in that pipeline. But, you know, the Fed rate path is very unclear right now. Certainly a half point is off the table for next month, maybe a quarter. That's also dependent on the inflation report that we get on Thursday. Certainly our average hourly earnings were up 5% in that jobs report that was reasonably well received on Friday. So again, kind of murky and unclear heading into earnings season.
Now, some analysts, and in one very isolated case, one Noon Business Hour host, Matt, said the jobs report last Friday was a sign that the soft landing has been achieved. But what are some of the big question marks about interest rates and inflation that we have going forward?
Well, I do agree with him. I mean, unquestionably, the Fed carried off a really historic soft landing. Fine. Okay, great. It's here. Now what? Do rates go down further? How long can this placid, kind of bubbling along jobs market keep on going? Will we continue to have disinflation, or will just the rate curve just sort of set down and lock in here? So we really don't know. And a lot is dependent, honestly, on the outcome of the election next month, which is really the gorilla in the room. You know, we can talk all we want about the next data points, earnings coming in, but the direction of regulations in Washington is going to be critical. And, you know, we're just going to have to hold our breaths over the next 30 days.
Now, you say, let's not talk about data points. I want to give you one more data point that we can discuss, and that is when assessing the jobs market, what does the Fed, where do they turn? Do they go to the government jobs report that comes out the Friday after the first of the month? Or do they also look inside things like the JOLTS report, the quit rates, the number of openings that exist in terms of determining whether or not interest rates can keep the job market chugging along?
Well, if you've ever listened to Jerome Powell, it's very comprehensive and actually really impressive. They take data in from everywhere. There's 500 economists working at the Federal Reserve, hard at work. These people are supposed to know. However, I would say the jobs report that I'm looking at on my computer right now is really the authoritative report that they look at. And, you know, along with, of course, the two inflation reports, the one this Thursday and the one that they like that comes out later in the month. So, again, a strong jobs report is clear cut. That's going to back them off on the rate cuts.
Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, dealing with weather-related delays and cancellations.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday. The two major hurricanes in the southeast U.S. are impacting airlines, resorts, and cruise ships. Let's get some help in dealing with these types of situations with Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her on social media at JetSetJulietTravels. Juliet, thank you for joining us today. And I have this vision of this family. They're gathered around. It was a big surprise. It was somebody's birthday present. Let's say it was April or May or June. And they said, guess what? On October 11th, we're going to Disney World. Count the days. Save your money. It'll be the greatest trip of your life. What do you do in that situation?
Well, so this is one of the most difficult moments in my business. I mean, I'm inevitably going to have clients who declined travel insurance or trip protection, and they ended up having their vacation tanked because of some unforeseen calamity. So I mean, my thing is I always, right before we even, I mean, before we start even the process of talking about what you want to do, I always encourage every single client to make sure that there's some sort of safety net in place when they book a vacation. And I have to tell you, Rob, I have clients that bristle at this. I've lost potential clients over this because they're like, why is she pushing travel insurance on me? You know, why is she's trying to make money off of me? This is why, because life is unpredictable. You know, you and your travel party, you're taking time off of work, you're taking time off of school, you're spending your hard-earned money, you're taking the kids, all the kids are so excited, they've got their Mickey Mouse outfits ready to go, and God forbid something goes wrong either before or during your trip, and you're going to wish you had that safety net. So, I mean, there are ways to kind of mitigate this nightmare that people are facing right now who are planning on going down to Florida. I mean, at this point, if you haven't gone down to Florida, you're probably not going to go down to Florida to Disney World because, you know, you're going to get slammed. But I mean, there are ways to deal with a vacation disruption. You know, honestly, I mean, have you ever had to deal with this before?
Not me personally, but it did happen in my family. And you bring up a very important point about travel insurance. And maybe COVID changed our relationship with travel insurance, the idea of it was just an unnecessary expense going into the COVID-19 pandemic. But so many countries had different policies about testing and when a positive test could end your vacation, that it seems like a lot more travelers became more comfortable with the idea of travel insurance. Because for the longest time, if you had a positive test in some other country, you weren't coming back.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. So the biggest things I think you have to consider are, you know, again, expect the unexpected, but buy travel insurance or trip protection. And there's a difference between the two. They kind of depends on a couple factors. But generally, travel insurance is typically more expensive because it's more extensive. It covers a wider range of risks and scenarios, including medical emergencies. You know, like, so if you're overseas and God forbid something happens, you've got to go to the hospital, you've got to get the ambulance. Like, this stuff is going to be covered depending on, you know, what plan you choose. Trip protection is different from travel insurance in that it is generally a bit more limited, but depending on the supplier, you can customize it so that it's just as good as insurance. But I think the big question for a lot of people is, well, what am I supposed to choose? And Rob, I always say, if you're traveling internationally, if you're, you know, you're elderly, you have medical issues, you're pregnant, anything that can increase, something can go wrong before and during your trip, I say get the most extensive coverage that you can. If you don't have challenges, you're just doing, you know, let's say a girl's trip to a spa in Arizona, then limited coverage is usually okay. I hate to toot my own horn, but a good travel advisor really can help you navigate these kind of things. I mean, if you don't want to pay for coverage, at the very least, and I know people are going to say, but it's expensive to do this, I would say just book an unrestricted reservation. So if it's a flight, buy a fare that allows you to cancel, or at least a fare that allows you to change your flight, you know, preferably for no fee. If it's a hotel, choose the refundable option. Typically, you can cancel a hotel the day before your arrival, in most cases, and you'll get a full refund. When you deal with Airbnbs and Vrbo's, and that's a whole different ballgame, they're a little different. You know, some properties you can cancel like a month before and get all your money back, some a week before and you get half, you know. But again, the key is paying attention to the cancellation deadlines when you book instead of waiting until the 11th hour, like today when it's too late.
Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her on social media at JetSetJulietTravels. Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday, and still to come, clearing up some credit card myths.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There are some common beliefs about credit cards that may be hazardous to your financial health. Let's get some help from Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And what is the biggest and most costly misconception about credit cards?
I believe the biggest myth is that carrying a balance is good for your credit score. That is definitely false. The best way to use a credit card is to pay in full and on time every month. You want to avoid these high interest rates. The average credit card charges almost 21%.
And yeah, that's something we talk about an awful lot. But how did that particular mode of thinking kind of sink into the general population?
Yeah, it's kind of puzzling. You know, maybe it's because technically it's better to show a little bit of activity than no activity at all. Like, you don't want a dormant card. But having a statement balance that you pay off right away can help you build credit, but you don't want to actually carry it beyond the due date.
And then what about, some people are hesitant to have multiple credit cards, but that takes you back into the credit score discussion. If you have that one credit card, you use it exclusively, you almost max it out, but you pay it off every month, you don't carry a balance, you still get dinged just because credit utilization plays into your score.
Yes, having more available credit and using less of it is a good thing. Credit is kind of like getting work experience. You know, it takes work experience to get a better job. It takes credit to get credit. And actually, using a credit card responsibly is one of the best ways to build credit because, you know, let's face it, you're not going to get a mortgage or a car loan just to build credit. You might not even qualify in the first place, you know, if you haven't built credit. It's kind of circular in that sense. But, you know, a credit card is something you could get that could be completely free. You get a no annual fee card, you pay it off before interest hits. It's really a powerful credit building tool. Too many young adults are shying away from it. I understand that it's reasonable to be afraid of debt, but you don't want to avoid it unnecessarily. If you can trust yourself to use the card for everyday expenses and pay it off, it can serve you well for rewards and credit building.
And that takes us to the next one, and that is debit cards are safer than credit cards. And my own perspective on that is if someone grabs a hold of your debit card number, they have a direct line to your bank. If they have grab a hold of your credit card number, you have a recourse that may not cost you any money.
Exactly. Even though debit cards have fraud protections, it's hard to get the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, it's going to be a period of days, maybe even weeks, where that money is missing from your checking account. With the credit card, it's really the bank's money up until you pay them back. It's just a line of credit. So if there's fraudulent charges, you don't have to pay for those, and it's an easier process. So that's another advantage of credit cards. The one big drawback of credit cards is the high interest rates. But if you're among the half of cardholders who pay in full every month, then you get better buyer protections, you get better rewards, and you don't owe any interest.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.